Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
I'm delighted to say Mick O'Connell and Esther McCarthy join us once again. Good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hello, there you are, Esther. Good to hear you. Your film selection, Esther, doesn't sound great this week. Would that be fair enough to say?
Yeah, well, actually, one of them is really sweet. It's just I didn't know any of the people involved. I thought it was maybe a little bit obscure, but actually, there's a lot of new talent and people to watch out for, I think, coming through in it. That's the Broken Hearts Gallery.
Right, okay.
The Road's Not Taken is, I suppose, one that arrived with a lot of expectation because it's a British filmmaker by the name of Sally Potter, who was really kind of making independent cinema before women were making independent cinema in this part of the world. She made a film called Orlando about 20 years ago that got a lot of awards, and more recently made films like The Party. So this one came with a lot of anticipation, I suppose, and a really starry cast, including Javier Bardem, Elle Fanning, Laura Linney and Salma Hayek. But it just didn't quite work for me, I have to say. We'll talk a bit more about why later.
All right, okay. Now, manage to watch I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
Okay, go on.
Apart from the joke he made, what's it about?
Well, my take on it was if you could relive your life through different timelines and time zones and, you know, all the things that you regretted, that you could upend all of those and right so many wrongs in your life. And I found it incredibly moving. And then I read an interview with Charlie Kaufman, where in IndieWire in the US actually persuaded Charlie Kaufman to explain his film. And I read his piece and I thought, Charlie's got it wrong. Like, that's not what it was about at all.
What did he say it was about?
It's actually a real breakdown analysis. You know what? I'll put it up on Twitter later because it's quite a long piece.
Because there's
it's
even
a real deconstruct, actually.
Yeah, there's even sections in the book where they're deconstructing talking about a John Cassavetes film, which is pretty heady stuff as well anyway.
Absolutely.
And you know, the thing was, it didn't remind me of a Kaufman. It reminded me of a David Lynch film.
That's what the hubby said as well when he was watching it. He thought it was very Lynchy.
Yeah.
Did you like it though?
No, I did. But I mean, the thing is, but I suppose it's one of those things. And it is, if you've watched Twin Peaks and stuck with it and kind of let yourself go to the notion of, I haven't a clue what's going on. This isn't about understanding, then it's very enjoyable. But like, we had a big long discussion as to what the hell was going on, whether various characters actually existed, whether they were figments of other people's imagination, who actually were two different actors the same character, what was the pig about, all sorts of things that, and it was almost like he laid a series of traps and said, I defy you to try and figure out what the hell's going on here. And it's kind of about physics and time and life and I suppose relativity in your emotional life as well as relativity in the physical realm, and those two things interspersed with each other. But other than that, God knows.
Actually, whether characters are a figment of the imagination hadn't occurred to me, and he raises that in the interview, which made me go, no. I rejected a lot of what he was saying. He obviously doesn't know what film he made, you know.
No, he doesn't know.
And I do.
He's
a
total amateur.
I know more than Charlie Kaufman about Kaufman's films.
But I will say, Jessie Buckley, fabulous. And
isn't she just amazing?
And there was a few moments. There was a few bits as well where, because even they were referencing old, classic Hollywood movies, she has a bang of the Audrey Hepburn offer at times, you know, of that kind of, you know, quick talking Hollywood, character that you'd see in black and white films.
Absolutely. She's amazing. And I love how she stepped up to this opportunity that she has at the moment. And I just honestly, every time I see that slightly lopsided smile that she has, it just melts me in the way that you can't look away from Barry Keoghan, say, when he's on screen, you know, just really, you can just see why they're getting cast in everything, both of them. I think she's just wonderful.
I was wondering about that smile, because it's almost like she can, because she has different smiles, but she, you know, she almost deployed the lopsided smiles at specific times and then didn't.
Yeah, and I mean, if that was your introduction to her, I would recommend that you watch Wild Rose. It's a film, it's a little indie, it's probably on Netflix by now, I'd say, that was made in Glasgow about 3 years ago, where she plays a country musician who dreams of going to Nashville. And she is a terror of a woman. She's so bold, but you just fall in love with her. She's an ex-convict and she's got two kids who she doesn't give the love and affection that she should. And it's a really, it's a lovely kind of kitchen sink British drama. Mm. And she performs all the songs in it and she's amazing. And I found out when I interviewed her, she wrote a lot of the songs on soundtrack as well. So she's just this force of nature and this wonderful talent that we have coming out of the country.
Okay, and isn't it great? And I suppose, and such a good actor that's probably, you know, and so obviously so good at accents that, you know, some Irish people will not realise she's Irish for quite some time. And then when you hear her talking in her own accent, it's like Donald Gleeson, it sounds like he's putting it on.
Yeah, it's she has a real... It's like she's a real Killarney accent as well. She is like she kind of lilts and sings as she speaks in real life. So hopefully she'll get to play Kerry at some stage.
Okay, hopefully she will. We do have a hashtag, by the way, because we told the story of Heloise and Abelard earlier on in the week. So it's Monastic Movies is our hashtag for this week. Mick O'Connell joins us as well. Mick, so what are we talking about today?
We have two red wines. So a Beaujolais Village from a producer called Le Grappin, who's makes wine in the walls, the old walls of Beaune and Burgundy. And then we have a Rioja from a producer called Lopez de Haro. And that's a Crianza, so 2017, a little bit of oak, but these are two kind of classic wines. I find myself talking on here about Beaujolais a lot because people always recommend or are asking for recommendations for kind of refreshing reds. And Beaujolais, for me, is the wine of this year, certainly. This is
okay.
I've been drinking more Beaujolais this year, and both in volume and in various producers this year than I ever have before.
And per capita. what is Crianza a grape or?
No, so Crianza is a kind of aging level. So you have different aging levels within Rioja, Crianza, Reserva and Gran Reserva. And it really just means the amount of time it spends in oak.
Right. Okay. Right. Okay. So is there like a Crianza score?
Not a score so much. It's just I'm going to be terrible. I'm a master of wine. I always forget this stuff. But it's like I think it's a year in oak and then a year in bottle before release for Crianza.
Right.
And then
okay.
I think it's a year and a half in Reserva in oak and then a year in bottle and then Gran Reserva. I think it might be 2.5 years in oak and then 2 years in bottle before release.
Okay. Right.
When you someone is going to message in.
Oh no, no doubt. Yeah,
idiot.
Yeah. That's what the function of radio is, to tell you how wrong you are. When you are a master of wine, can you then teach other people? Is that like being like a Jedi?
A little bit, yeah, yeah. So you take on students as kind of what's the word that you're kind of not apprentice, but that you're helping along through their journey in the master of wine.
Right.
It's a long old study thing. We had a winemaker from Ireland, Roisin Curley. She makes wine in Burgundy. She's from Mayo, Ballyhaunas. And she became the most recent Irish master of wine last week, which is absolutely fantastic. And I think that takes us up to 8 of us living here.
Right, yeah. And actually, yeah, because Jean was saying that as well, that the proportion of masters of wine in Ireland is way disproportionate to our population.
We're doing pretty well, yeah. We're doing pretty well. As in, I think there's 8 of us living here, but then there's probably another 10 Irish masters of wine who live in the UK or in the States or wherever. So I think if you count the whole lot, we might be 17 or 18 total worldwide, which out of, I think now 409, it's pretty good going.
That's pretty good. Pauline wants to know, is there a wine to drink when you're sick of wine? Like something to really invigorate the palate? I need to surprise myself at this stage.
And
Pauline's had all the wines.
Pauline, you are going to have to taste this Beaujolais Village because again, it's that chilled. You can drink this. It's a light red wine, but you drink it chilled or slightly chilled.
Okay.
So it's refreshing and it's bright and you get all this kind of crunchy fruit. But that kind of invigorating word is certainly a wine that I would. Beaujolais is the kind of style that you'd liven the palate.
Because I suppose, yeah, if you're drinking a lot of Syrah or that, you know, or kind of tannic ones, you forget about Beaujolais.
Yeah,
you think
absolutely.
It's kind of wimpy. Yeah.
I think we fall into this trap in general, particularly men actually, where we kind of know a couple of words about wine and it's like
yes.
Full-bodied red. They're the three words that I know. So if you go into a restaurant and go full-bodied red, you're going to get a Malbec or a Shiraz or a Bordeaux or something along those lines. But actually in general, to be honest, I think we all just like all wine.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
If it's a bad wine, we won't like it. But these kind of things, these are both delicious wines. Totally different styles. People aren't going to turn their nose up to these things at all. But if you've been drinking Malbec and Shiraz and these kind of heavy things, trying a light red chilled, that's a pleasure.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I'm polyamorous when it comes to wine. I enjoy nothing more than a wine orgy.
As long as it's wet and alcoholic.
Yeah. And everyone's consenting, of course. Stefan says, cooking lobster this weekend. I know. We bought them already dead and frozen. Okay. Couldn't be dealing with the live action cooking. What should I be pairing with it? We're going very basic and having lobster with lemon and fresh rocket salad with radish, garlic, parmesan and some pancetta. Nothing too fussy, but very tasty.
Sounds delicious. I think with lobster, I mean, you're kind of spoiling yourself already. Maybe champagne, you know, you could do a glass of Bollinger or something like that. Or if you preferred a still wine, Chablis. I mean, Chablis is just that mineral, fine but refreshing style of white as well. That would be great with lobster.
Can you get wine in a can? I'm doing some hiking and don't want to chance bringing glasses in case it breaks. A can would be more durable, I figure. I hope you're not like hiking up someplace high and necking back a few cans of wine. That's maybe not advisable.
You can now get wine in cans. It's slowly becoming a thing here in Ireland. There's a very cool one called Ramona, which is kind of an organic wine that's mixed with a kind of soft drink. So it's quite fun, no pretense at all. That's Ramona, and I think it's pink grapefruit flavoured, but it's a very, very fun drink when you're doing your hike and is also pretty invigorating. But you are seeing more, and you'll even see some in your supermarket now.
I agree with you. This is now back to thinking of ending things. I agree it being a great movie, great actors, but I honestly have no idea what was going on. What was the pig yolk at the end? I enjoyed the ride, but I have no clue what I watched. But I assume the pig had some connection with, because you remember when they arrive at the house and he tells her a story about the pig and its stomach was full of maggots. So I assume it's that pig. I watched that movie last night. Biggest load of crap I've ever watched. I finished watching it purely hoping something might happen. It didn't. 2.5 hours I'll never get back, says Johnny D. Tell me, Johnny, what would you have been doing? Would you have written a masterpiece in that time? Were you thinking of composing something to make the world a better place, which we'll never have? Oh, no! The cure for cancer eludes us once more. Esther, how can I sign up to the Jesse Buckley fan club? I love the movie. I think I want to end things. I now will never question any of your recommendations. I forgive you for The Irishman and see it as a blip. What movie is ours should I seek out next? I've seen Wild Rose and I loved it, says Rachel. Has she anything? I assume she's got something coming up.
Rachel was doing so well there until The Irishman comment. She just couldn't leave it, could she? There's a film called Beast. I was lucky. I was onto the Jesse Buckley fan club early because she brought a little indie film called Beast to the Dublin International Film Festival about 4 years ago, and I was asked to do the public interview, and we just had a hoot because half of Killarney had come up on the train and was in the audience, and you know, including me, like our old school teachers and stuff. So it was just the best Q&A. But that's a really good film that would be widely available by now. Again, it's a real a thriller with a sting in its tail, a very good independent British film set in the Isle of Man, revolving around a suspected criminal. I'll say no more than that. So that's well worth your time.
Okay.
And I think I mentioned last week she's in Chernobyl as well, the TV series, which I haven't seen.
Right.
But she's in that as well. I think she was the wife of one of the first responders. And you will next see her in Maggie Gyllenhaal's new film, but that's only started shooting. I think she's filming that at the moment.
Right, okay. The juror in Kilcullen says, judging by the way Sean is talking about the film, it sounds like a load of rubbish. If you come out of a film and you haven't a clue what it's about, it's crap, or else Sean missed the point, which is unlikely. It's very generous of you, juror, to say that. But I don't think it intended to be a movie where you could just walk out and go, oh, that's what it's about. And, you know, there was a straightforward narrative story. It was more like a meditation.
I really came away from it with the sense that he wanted the film to be what you wanted it to be. That's really the sense. I found it quite liberating rather than puzzling to watch, actually. And actually, one little bit of information I only found out the other day, you know, when she does the big deconstruct of that movie,
yeah,
the big long takedown of it, that's actually entirely from the writings of Pauline Kael, the great American film critic, regarded as one of the best critics of all time.
Ah.
That's, that entire passage is from her takedown of that film.
Well, you know, as well, I noticed that there's Jesse Buckley's character changes what she does for a living several times. She's a physicist, then she's a poet, then she's a painter. Yeah. And there's a scene where, you know, he doesn't want her to go into the basement of the house, and then she does. And she has already described how she paints kind of scenes with no people in them. Kind of rural scenes, and you know, the father doesn't like that, and then she goes down into the basement and there's posters there for a painter who paints exactly those sorts of paintings. And so I looked it up to see, is this a real person? And it is a real person. What struck me in the Wikipedia entry about him, anyway, I forget what his name is, but that he's the most forged American painter of all time. Now, I'm not sure if there was some sort of little joke he was making in there or not, and I suppose that's part of the intrigue of the film itself. Another one, someone's texted in about this. Who's the janitor?
Oh, I don't know. I'm going to have to watch it again, haven't I?
Yeah, well, you see, well, I suppose there's a school of thought that maybe the janitor is the other Jesse.
Yeah, I thought it was him, actually. I thought it was the guy. The guy.
Yeah.
That would be the other Jesse. Yeah, that's who I thought it was as well.
Yeah, that's who I thought it was. But but you know, is he imagining then the life he should have had, or it's weird? Yeah. Always love the Javier Bardem joke. A barman to customer. We had that guy who played the villain in Skyfall in yesterday. What's his name again? Anyway, he was really messy and loud. Customer, Javier Bardem? Nah, I just told him to quiet down and cop himself on. Boom, boom. Right, Mick, what one should we have first?
So we're going to do the Beaujolais first. So got to start with the lighter of the two wines generally and build up to the heavier one. But this is from a couple. They call themselves Le Grappin, and it's Andrew and Emma Nielsen. Andrew is from Australia and Emma's from England. And the two of them met while touring the world, making wine in all kinds of different places. So Andrew's would have made wine in Oz, in New Zealand, in the States. And then obviously everyone hones in on the romantic region, which is Burgundy.
Mm.
So they make Beaujolais, and then they make various crus throughout the Burgundy region. But this particular style, this would definitely count as a kind of natural wine. So it's organic viticulture, and they're very, very hands-off in the winery. So this natural phenomenon, there's no real kind of, there's no full description of what it actually is. There's no rules to become natural. It's kind of a little bit like punk music. People just do what they feel like a little bit. But in order to make wine like this, very, very clean, natural wine, you have to be so pedantic in the winery. And Andrew is an uber geek. So he is a super, super geek. Like when I come along and visit him to taste, the first thing he wants to show me is his new microscope to look at the yeasts. And you're going, okay, man, can we taste the wine? That'd be way more fun. But he's an absolute nerd when it comes to all these things. And he follows a method called the Jules Chauvet method. And Jules Chauvet is the guy who was the kind of godfather of natural wine. And really what Jules Chauvet was doing was he was doing a lot of work on not using sulfites in wine. And what Jules Chauvet kind of during his studies showed that if you use too much sulfites, it can dull the flavors of the wine and dull the aromatics. So this is a zero sulfite added wine, and Andrew would make quite a lot of styles like that. But the Chauvet method is really nerdy. You're taking a microscope and you're counting the amount of yeasts. And when you get to a certain amount of yeasts, then you pull the juice off the skins and then you start the fermentation in a different way in a different container. But in terms of style, this is light and bright and
this is lovely.
So crunchy and tart and all of those kind of things. So it's a very, very refreshing red wine. This is fairly widely available. You'll pick it up in Greenman and Terranure. You'll get it in McHugh's and out our way in on the Kilbarrack Road or the Malahide Road. And you'll get it just down the road from the studio here in Loose Cannon. So this would be about $24.99, so it's not a cheap wine, but it's definitely one of those wines that are super flexible with food and particularly good with different cheeses as well.
And if you are, and you know, you're absolutely right, if you're wined out, you go, ooh,
It's so different to the kind of standards. And even the wine that we're going to look at next, the Rioja. I mean, Rioja is, we love Rioja in Ireland, but it is a wine that we would drink a lot of. And everybody almost knows what to expect from Rioja. With Beaujolais, I think this is a wine that it's a rare enough thing that we would drink. Although things like Fleury, and Fleury is a Beaujolais, would be very, very popular here as well.
Yeah.
But I think Beaujolais Village is something that we all should be drinking a little bit more of.
I heard Fleury described once as a starter wine.
I like the sound of it.
Not a complimentary way. Horse hands. Horse hands, a height, were taken from the width of an average hand across the knuckles, roughly 4 inches. You'd count up hand by hand to the top of the horse's withers, the bony part in front of the saddle. 14 hands is a large pony. 14.2 is 14 hands, 2 inches. 16.2 is an average sport horse, i.e. a competition show jumper. Race horses are about 15.2 or 16 hands high. They're slight. A big heavy hunter would be 17 hands high. The skeleton gets bigger as the horse's height increases. So the height of the withers being, say, only 2 inches higher makes you think not much in the difference. However, it represents an overall increase. So the difference between 14 hands high and 16.2 hands is huge, says Christine. Now, yeah, sorry you asked. And Joy on Twitter, going back to I'm thinking of ending things. This is an intriguing note to end things on. She says, I thought the couple were the same person and they were both the janitor. Now for ya. Now, head meltingly interesting. Right, so what movie would you like to talk about first after the break, Esther?
Let's do the Broken Hearts Gallery.
Okay, Broken Hearts Gallery coming up after this.
Hello? I'm sorry. No, I'll cancel. You're not Adolfo? Who are you?
My name is Nick.
You just drove me home? Are you insane? What's the plan? You're just gonna, weaken me with paint fumes and then just knock me out with lumber? Leave me for dead?
I did you a favor. I too have had a bad day.
Oh my god, stop.
No.
Oh shit, this is the end!
Help! No! Oh, it's unlocked.
Oh. Okay. Good night. Thanks.
That's the Broken Hearts Gallery, which you can go to see in a cinema. You can look that up in a dictionary to find out what that is. So, Esther, what's this one about?
This is lovely. That's a scene that isn't as creepy as it's going to sound.
Did sound creepy, yes.
It's actually played for comedy and it works really well. So she's had a bad day. She's just found out. This is Geraldine Viswanathan. An actress we're going to talk a little bit more about because I've seen her in a couple of things this year and she's going to be a breakout star of 2020, I think. But she plays Lucy here, who's an assistant in an art gallery in New York. And she's seeing this guy and finds out just before a gallery launch that he's been seeing his ex on the sly. So, you know, she does what any woman would do in that situation, is get completely drunk on the free wine and is then asked by her boss to make a speech at the launch where she has a complete Bridget Jones style meltdown, loses her job, loses her bloke and decides to kind of hobble into what she thinks is an Uber home. But it's not. It's just a guy who's parked in the car. And he's played by Dacre Montgomery. Who's just lovely here. He's just a nice fella. That's kind of what I really liked about this. His name is Nick, and he kind of tries to get her out of the car at first, but can see just a jaded woman in a lot of pain and decides to give her a lift home. They become friends, and that's what I love about this film. They stay friends for an awful lot of it, and you are absolutely yearning them to get together, but they just keep making a hames of it. This is a proper romantic comedy in the traditional sense, and I'm a big fan of this genre. But what happened in the 90s was people decided romantic comedies, or Hollywood decided romantic comedies, were a bit jaded and they needed to be edgier. Unfortunately, Hollywood in the 90s making rom-coms edgier involved penis and fart jokes mostly, and they just kind of fell out of fashion then. Audiences stopped going and, you know, but I love that.
I mean, fart jokes went out of fashion. I find that difficult to believe.
Only in some quarters. Yes. But I'm just, I've missed them, you know. And I just say, find someone who looks at you the way Dacre Montgomery's character looks at this woman. It's just lovely, and it's a bit woke at times, a bit hip and trying to be a bit too modern. But at the heart of all this, it's just two people you totally believe in as a couple and willing them to get together. But there are problems, of course, otherwise there'd be no drama.
Right, okay.
So I suppose her, you know, he's trying to set up a gallery in this old hostel, a hotel actually, and she decides, you know what, while you're trying to set it up, can I set up a gallery here? And she calls it the Broken Hearts Gallery because she is, Lucy's a bit stalkery at times, like she does get very upset if she breaks up even with new fellas, like her friends have been kind of giving out to her about this for a while. And she also keeps mementos of everyone she's ever gone out with, including, worryingly, a collection of toenail clippings from one ex-boyfriend. So lovely. So she kind of says, this can't be just me, you know. So she puts a tie from the last guy who broke her heart up and sets up this gallery space, and other people in the neighborhood start bringing their own mementos of love lost. So that's kind of the idea behind it. She is trying to raise a few bob to help Nick get the hotel built. He just encounters a lot of setbacks along the way. He can't get a bank loan. They have a falling out. There's a misunderstanding. She goes back with the stupid ex, which had me actually shouting at the screen. And
that's a good sign, just, actually.
Yeah, it's just lovely. I was invested in it. As I said, I could have done with a few less woke references. It just felt like it was reaching too hard and trying too hard. But other than that, as a couple, I loved them. Geraldine Viswanathan is really good here. She's a natural comedian. It's very funny. The script's very funny. And I don't know if you got to see yet a movie that's been on Amazon Prime all summer called Bad Education. We reviewed it earlier in the summer with Hugh Jackman and Allison Janney.
Yes, yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
It's really good, actually. But she's in a small but very significant scene where she plays a junior reporter in the college who gets really patronised by Hugh Jackman and ends up serving him, like ends up just going on a paper trail. And finding lots of information, lots of proof that he's been fraudulent, committed fraud in school, basically. So she was really good in that as well. And she just, even, I suppose my point is, she's just luminous here. But even when she's a smaller part in a film, she sticks out. I think you're going to see a lot from her in the future. And lots of new talent in here as well. And a first-time filmmaker, an American filmmaker by the name of Natalie Krinsky. She wrote the script as well. Like, she's a standard TV writer. She's written episodes of Grey's Anatomy and stuff like that.
All right, yeah.
But this has got picked up here, possibly due to the star power maybe of Selena Gomez, who is an executive producer on this one and whose hands are all over the film. She actually introduces the film at the screening I saw. So it's obviously her pet, her baby. I liked this. I liked it in the way that you liked The Big Sick. I you know, it's not as good as that film. It's not as note perfect as that film, but they're just two really likable people and two funny people that you want to get together. And isn't that lovely?
Isn't that? No, that's actually, that sounds very refreshing. Really, yeah. It should be said. Anyway, back to I'm thinking of ending things. How did her poem that she recited in the car end up in his parents' book? Are the parents actually the two Jessies? There's one theory. Yeah. There's also he shows her a picture of himself when he was a child in the house, and she says, "That's not you, that's me."
Yes, that's the bit that stood the hairs in the back of my head, I have to be honest, because when you see the image as well, it looks like it could be both of them.
Yeah, Jesse Buckley, and the fact that he chose two actors both called Jesse. Jesse Buckley isn't a real character in the film. She is the alter ego of the boyfriend. So is the janitor. Another conundrum.
Wow. I just believed everything I saw.
She's
actually, Brie Larson was originally, I don't think the casting was that, Brie Larson was originally cast in that.
Oh, yeah.
And she went off to do Captain Marvel and had to walk away from the project. So that's how Jessie got cast.
Right. OK, you could see Brie Larson doing it as well. Lots of love for Jessie Buckley, though. She's brilliant in Chernobyl. Best thing she's been in. Jessie Buckley shone way ahead of all the UK's bright young things in the BBC's adaptation of Dr. Zhivago. She's very talented and a mature young actor, says Dave. I saw Jessie Buckley recently in the Woman in White series and I had no clue who she was at the time. She was excellent as Marion Halcombe. says Anita. Another texter says, and this is going back to wine, you can't beat a nice light red wine. Helps you stay awake. Well, in the sense that it doesn't send you off to sleepy land in the middle of the movie, the way a full-bodied wine does. Gamay is great. Is it a grape? Love Gamay, love Beaujolais, says Kieran.
Yeah, so Gamay is the grape variety in Beaujolais.
Ah, right. Yeah. There you go. That answers that question. Everyone is blabbing on about Whispering Angel this year, but I remember when they were banging on about Cloudy Bay. Is that wine still nice, or is it no longer flavour of the month?
It is still a very, very good New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc. I think how Cloudy Bay kind of launched onto the market originally was really, really clever. They did this kind of allocation system where if you were a wine shop, they'd say to you, you can only have 10 cases.
Mm.
And as soon as that happens in wine, people are going, I've only got 10 cases of this. So the next customer in goes, I want 10 cases of it, please.
Yeah.
So it sells instantly and you get this kind of legend status really quickly. So they had done an amazing job launching that. But it's like a lot of the New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs, it's of a style. It's that really grassy kind of tropical fruit, which is why it's so popular.
Yeah, because I remember when, you know, there'd be signs up in the city saying we just got in, you know, or we're getting it in next week and form an orderly queue.
You can have a bottle. That's all.
Where can I get Le Grappin Beaujolais Village in a shop or online? Brendan, who's in Carrickmacross, wants to know.
So that's the one that we're tasting now, Le Grappin Beaujolais Village 2018. Definitely have it in Green Man. Definitely have it in Loose Cannon. And Loose Cannon have a website called nattywine.ie, and that would send all around Ireland.
Right. Well, there you go, Brendan. Right, we do have to take a break. One more wine, one more movie after this. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on Newstalk. Esther McCarthy and Mick O'Connell are still with us. We have been talking about one film already, lovely Beaujolais, and we talked about The Broken Hearts Gallery, which sounds like quite a fun film too. But most of the discussion has been about thinking of ending things. When Jesse looks in the washing machine in the basement, the shirts have the same logo as the one the janitor in the school is wearing. That's true. Tim says, stop with all the spoilers. I've saved it for tonight. Is it ruined? No. The one thing we can say is this film is unspoilable. Because the more you find out about it, the more you're going, what? On the subject of Mulan, Esther was talking about last week, I paid the fee to watch Mulan with my 8-year-old. God, it was bad. It lacked the magical essence and charm of the animated version. We suffered through it because I'd paid for it, but won't be making that mistake again, says Carla. So one unhappy customer there, Esther.
I thought it was quite good, but it's certainly not. It doesn't bear comparison even to the animated film. Like, it's a totally different animal. So I could understand people being disappointed if they're expecting a live action take on the animated film. The songs are all gone for one, you know?
Yeah. Javier Bardem, best Bond villain there ever was, hands down, says the texter. And Bacta, I'm thinking of ending things. I'm thinking of ending things was what I watched last Saturday evening whilst in recovery from either food or alcohol poisoning. Please do not do the same. My brain felt like someone took it out and put it back in upside down. I really want to watch it again now that I'm never drinking again. Thanks, Movies and Booze, for recommending the movie. And let's face it, the wine too. Oh yeah, it's our fault you've a hangover. Mick, having venison tonight with triple cooked chips. I've been thinking about it all day. I'm afraid to ask for a full body, so can I ask Mick suggest a red of any degree to wash it all day?
Funnily enough, a full bodied red would work pretty well with the venison here.
Yes, like, it would.
I think if you go for one of the prettier, more floral styles of Bordeaux for venison, it would go really well. So that's Margaux and Saint-Julien, which are both left bank, and they tend to be the kind of lighter styles of Bordeaux. They're still fairly full-bodied reds, but in the lighter kind of end of things. And then if you went for a more structured Burgundy, that would be absolutely cracking with venison. So something from Nuits Saint-Georges or something like that.
Yeah.
Actually, Rioja works pretty well as well.
Okay, so, let's move on to that one in the few minutes we have left.
So we've got Lopez de Haro, and this is a producer from San Vicente de la Sonsierra. So it's in the northern part of Rioja. And Rioja is a really interesting kind of climate. It's got a little bit of Atlantic influence, but a lot of that is blocked by the mountain range above it. And then it's got a little bit of that Mediterranean influence. But really, often the star of the show in Rioja is actually the oaking. So with this, it's 18 months in American oak, and you get that kind of vanilla and almost coconutty kind of feel from this wine with that oaking. And you get that kind of red berry, Tempranillo is the grape.
Mm,
and it's always like it's almost kind of strawberries and cream kind of thing that you get. And that's why these wines are so velvety and easy to drink. You know, this is really widely available, and mainly because in Ireland, we love Rioja. I think we're the 9th biggest export market, and that's not by per capita. That's just in general.
Yeah.
So if you think, you know, it's probably something like 1 in every 10 bottles of wine in Ireland is probably Rioja.
Yeah,
it's crazy. But we absolutely love it as a style. And Spain as a whole is basically just Rioja to us.
Yeah.
We hardly sell any other Spanish wine at all. But I think this style suits the Irish palate and really works with a lot of the styles of food that we do, like beef, like venison, all of those kind of things.
Yeah.
But it's a great wine for a kind of everyday occasion. And this is pretty widely available as well. All the guys that I mentioned earlier, so your McHugh's, O'Driscoll's in Cork, Bradley's in Cork, Worldwide Wines, Waterford, it's all around.
Okay. Yeah, very nice. Right, we'll move on to our second film of the day. It is, The Road's Not Taken. Here's a clip.
I went to the dentist, and now we're going to the optometrist, if we ever get there.
Can you manage? Look, do you want me to come too? I suppose I could rearrange some things and...
Nestor is there?
No.
Nestor?
Oh, Nestor is no longer with us.
He's in heaven.
No.
Doggy heaven.
No.
He was a very good dog.
Nestor! Nestor!
Is he getting agitated? We can give him something to calm him down.
Why does everyone continue to refer to Dad as he? As if he's not here?
Well, is he?
There you go. The Road's Not Taken. Was that supposed to be like a tense moving scene? I couldn't make up my mind.
Yes.
Okay.
Tonally. And look, I really wanted to like this because Sally Potter is like, she's one of those proper indie filmmakers, you know, that does her own thing. And she's a very adventurous filmmaker. And this is coming from a personal place for her because it was inspired by her own experiences of nursing her brother who had dementia. So I really wanted to get on board with this, but it's God, Sean, mother of God, after Tenet and I'm thinking of ending things, I think I'm done with abstract, non-linear filmmaking for a while because this one is all that going on again. So maybe we just have something with a beginning, middle and end next weekend, you know. But it is that abstract style. It's Leo, who's played by Javier Bardem, who's struggling with dementia. So what we see is a man, you know, who's, I suppose, frozen in this kind of trapped in this illness. And what the movie is trying to do is go into his own mind as it goes off in adventures. And he's wondering what would have happened if he took other paths during the course of his life. So there's, you know, so we're seeing at least three different Javier Bardems. We're seeing the man who was very ill. And then we're seeing a scenario where he never leaves his native Mexico and settles with his first love, who's played by Salma Hayek. And in another life, he's retired to a Greek island to finish the novel he's been working on for years. But the reality of the film is much more sombre. As Molly, his daughter, spends a stressful day with her father, trying to bring him for dental and eyesight appointments, with his ex-wife, who's her mother, played by Laura Linney, who's a bit of a wagon, it has to be said, and the whole day descends into chaos. So it's a film about the carer as much as the sick person. Elle Fanning's character is very, you know, you really feel for her trying to make some hard choices about whether to put her father into care. It's a very moving concept and it's very well acted, but the story just wasn't there for me. It just wasn't developed enough in structure and, you know, and the narrative, the confused abstract narrative really didn't work for me at all. And as you know, I can get on board with the craziest ideas, as Charlie Kaufman proved last week. I can totally get on board with mad stuff, but this one, it just wasn't there for me in structure at all. I got a bit bored, I have to say. I got a bit bored with it.
Oh, God. Well, there you go. Damned with very faint praise. Got a bit bored is about the worst thing you could say about a film. Really.
Yeah, and it's not a long film either. It's only an hour and 20, so it just didn't hold the central conceit really for me at all.
Yeah. Just before we go, Patrick on Twitter says, what was the name of the thriller set on the Isle of Man, please?
That is Beast.
One? Ah, that's yeah, Beast, that's, yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's two films from Jessie worth seeing, at least two, but two that got me on board with her. One is Beast, I think it's about 4 or 5 years old. It's really, really good, a British film. And the other is one of my favourite movies of the last few years is Wild Rose, the one where she plays the bold Glaswegian who wants to be a country singer. It's the most enjoyable movie. Like, if you just want something that's a delight to watch, Wild Rose is it.
Great stuff. Thanks a million, Esther. Thanks again to Mick O'Connell as well. Our production team today, Aidan McKelvey, Michael Quilligan, Simon Tierney and Claire Collins. Kieran's up next on News Talk. We'll talk to you on Monday at 2 o'clock. Have a lovely weekend.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.